I got a man that's more than 8 foot tall, 4 foot shoulders, and that ain't all. King size papa, he's my king size papa. I take the door off the hinges when my baby comes to call.
This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell, your king size papa, sitting in for Mike. Mike will be back tomorrow night. Give you his take on the New Hampshire primary as it unfolds. Although if I had to take a wild guess out of absolutely nowhere, I'd say Mike comes on at, 7 o'clock West Coast time. I think that more or less by the time Mike comes on, it's over. At least on the Democratic side, I think that in New Hampshire tomorrow, it will be an enormous victory for Barack Obama. Rasmussen has Obama tying Hillary nationally at this time for the first time ever. Gallup, Rasmussen, ARG polls have Barack up anywhere from 6 to 12 points tomorrow. So on the Democratic side of things, you are looking at a very, very likely Obama victory in New Hampshire, especially if there is enormous turnout among independents. If there is a huge turnout independent-wise for Democrats in New Hampshire tomorrow, then that is very, very bad news for Arizona Senator John McCain. Because if you remember back in 2000 when McCain beat Bush decisively by 16 percentage points in New Hampshire, it was on the back of independents that he did this. And if those independents decide to vote in the Democratic primary and it's hardcore Republicans, McCain is going to have a hard time. Polls indicate that McCain and Romney are almost tied with each other in New Hampshire. Romney was trailing by about 3 points in the last polls that I saw. But emotions are running really, really high in the state of New Hampshire because this could very well end the candidacies of either Romney or McCain, or, for that matter, realistically speaking, Hillary Clinton. Despite the fact that she has money and organization to follow through all the way to the convention if she wants to, in reality, it will be very, very difficult to recover from the blows inflicted by Barack Obama in Iowa and New Hampshire should they come to pass. So much so that we decided to take a look at polls for South Carolina, which is the next primary after this one. Now listen to this. Obama leads Clinton by 20 points in South Carolina and Edwards by 34. Among Republicans, Huckabee doubles up Romney at 36 to 18. Now, South Carolina, that is away from now, but you have to figure that if Obama wins, those numbers will solidify. And if Romney holds on, he will do a little bit better. If McCain holds on, he'll do a little bit better. Romney and McCain are tied underneath Huckabee in South Carolina. But South Carolina's Republican Party is very, very, very heavily evangelical. In the northern part of the state of South Carolina, he is up by 22 points. In the middle of the state by 16. And in the low country, he leads by 14. Immigration is the big issue in South Carolina. The slavery thing having been solved many, many years ago, they got to pick on some dark-skinned people, I guess, and immigrants would seem to be it. But things are going very, very nasty in New Hampshire as we speak. Hillary Clinton broke down and cried. Did you hear about this? That's how high these emotions are running. She broke down and cried. She got a question from a woman at an event in Portsmouth. And she was asked, how did you get out the door every day? I mean, as a woman, how hard is it to get out of the house and get ready? Who does your hair? And Clinton said she had help on certain days, and she paused, and she started to cry. I just don't want to see us fall backwards as a nation. She strained. Her eyes were welting with tears. I mean, this is personal for me, not just political. I see what's happening. We have to reverse it. She actually became... she morphed into Ed Muskie on that moment. You remember that? 1972, Ed Muskie was a front runner. Democrats, he was a senator from Maine, and he was on the campaign trail in New Hampshire. And I guess they were effing with him. somewhat, and he appeared to cry. Later, he said it was snowing, and he had water in his eyes, and he wasn't crying. But Muskie crying buried him in New Hampshire. When word got out, he cried. That did him in, and George McGovern became the nominee. That, by the way, was attributed to Donald Segretti, who was Richard Nixon's head of dirty tricks. He was a member of CREEP, the Committee to Re-Elect the President. How aptly named an organization can you get? Creeps working for Richard Nixon. And now Hillary Clinton is crying, and I wonder if this is going to help her more than it has hurt her. After all, she has a public image as sort of an ice princess, as a walk, as an unfeeling, immovable, you-know-what with a B ends with an H. But if she cries and she breaks down, do you think it helps her or does it hurt her? Does it show that she's human or, in Bob Dylan's words, does it make her just like a woman? Let's think this outburst is going to help her tomorrow or hurt. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480, that is our number. 800-989-1480. You think this Hillary breakdown is going to help her? I'm not entirely sure. I got to tell you something. I get the feeling that if it is perceived that bitterness, unhappiness, disappointment, shock is the emotion that sent her into crying because she cannot believe that what was rightfully hers was snatched away by Barack Obama, it's not going to help her. If people feel that this proves that she has a human side and would in fact be a warm-hearted, adorable leader, well, then that does help her against Barack Obama, absolutely. But the fact that she is so far behind, I think very little is going to change for her. I would say that Obama has New Hampshire sewn up, South Carolina sewn up. The Michigan primary doesn't make any difference because Clinton and Kucinich are the only ones on the ballot. I think her firewall, as is the case with her fellow New York, well, she's not really a New Yorker, but although she is a senator from New York, as is the case with Rudy Giuliani, is going to be Florida. But even at that, I would think that if Obama wins in New Hampshire and takes South Carolina and he's leading by 20 points there, I think it's all over for the shouting on the Democratic side. The Republican side, it's just getting interesting. It's just starting to matriculate. It's going to boil. Because what you have here is you got Romney and McCain basically fighting it out as the acceptable sacrificial lamb later this year. Because why are we deluding ourselves here? It's 80% likelihood a Democrat's going to be elected in 2008. Country has Republican fatigue. They are exhausted with the last 8 years. We are going into a brutal, brutal housing decline. Lead story on Yahoo News today was that the housing situation in America is the worst that it has been since the Great Depression, and that they don't see anything but a modest upturn, and even that not coming till 2010. In these situations, people blame the figurehead. They blame the figurehead's party. I've actually had Republicans tell me, oh, well, if I live in a Democratic district with a Democratic congressman, I'm going to blame that congressman or congresswoman. So you don't understand. They look at Washington, D.C., and they see George Bush. That's the opponent they see. It's unfortunate that we're still wired to see ourselves as people that look up to kings and queens, but unfortunately in our lizard reptilian cortex, that's what we have. We have alpha males and alpha females. Who's ever at the top of things, they have to bear the brunt of the blame, and they are the ones who also get all the kudos when things are going good. However, I got to say, if Obama takes it tomorrow night, it is very likely that he will be unstoppable. But then there are those who would think that Hillary Clinton is a sympathy figure, as someone who is finally the underdog. Perhaps she will be looked at in a new light. Because after all, her saving grace, her selling point to the Democratic base, who she has literally spat and you-know-what on, with her horrific votes on, for the war and for expanding the war into Iran, she would be the Democratic nominee. But now you don't have to hold your nose and vote for her. Now the question is whether or not this little breakdown she had today, she was a bit verklempt in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. You think this helps her? She broke down and cried. Cried like a baby. We are at 989-1480, 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Interesting. I wonder if the cry does for her what the scream did for Howard Dean 4 years ago. 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. That is our number. I am Johnny Wendell, in for Mike Malloy. Mike will be back tomorrow, undoubtedly talking up the New Hampshire primaries. And a lot of other news happened in the world today, by the way. We will get to as much of it as we possibly can. 800-989-1480. Wendell in for Malloy. Don't go anywhere. Johnny Wendell in. New Hampshire primary is tomorrow, and emotions are running really, really high in the state of New Hampshire. According to the News Daily Update, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton had a bit of a breakdown on the campaign trail. Some people think elections are a game, she said. Who's up or who's down? Her voice breaking and tears welling in her eyes, according to the news report in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. It's about our country. It's about our kids' future. It's about all of us together. Some of us put ourselves out there and do this against some difficult odds. And as she went on, apparently about 15 or 16 undecided voters were at this event in Portsmouth. They nodded. Some of them, their eyes were welling up as well. And she said, we do it, each one of us, against difficult odds. We do it because we care about our country. Some of us are right and some of us are not. Some of us are ready and some of us are not. And that's the point that she is going to hit over and over again, assuming that she survives tomorrow intact, which is that she is ready to do this job, and Barack Obama is not, and John Edwards is not, Dennis Kucinich is not, Bill Richardson is not. I'm sorry, I don't see things that way. She was a first lady. She has been a senator from New York not a considerable amount of time longer than Barack Obama has been, for what, 4 years longer than Obama has been? She doesn't have an appreciably greater amount of experience than he does or that Senator Edwards does. Just because she was... I'm thinking to myself, the guy that operated on my knee when I was a kid. Like, if I looked up from the sedation and I saw his wife and she said, oh, don't worry about a thing, I'm married to the surgeon, you'll be okay, I'd be like, get me out of here. She was not privy to the defense briefings that President Clinton got. She wasn't a cabinet officer. She was his wife. And so the idea that she's ready and Barack Obama is not, I think, is a moot point. It's foolish of her to bring this up because it can be knocked down very easily and very simply. Question is, though, is as this story gains a little traction going into the last day before the elections in New Hampshire, do you think it helps or hurts Senator Clinton that she has been portrayed in the media as somebody that cries? We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Jerry, on Sirius Radio in North Carolina, you're on with Johnny. Jerry.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, what's up, Jerry?
Well, you know, I don't know if it makes her, you know, look more human or seem more human or what, and don't really care.
Right.
But when you get into the general election, how many thousands of times do you think that scene will be replayed in advertisements against her?
You know how many times it'll be, Jerry? If McCain is the Republican's nominee, it'll be played as many times as that picture of McCain with his arms around Bush preparing to have sex with him. Have you seen that thing, that lover's hug that they gave each other?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you've seen it. Okay. I got to tell you something. If McCain is the Republican's nominee, that thing is going to be on every Facebook page, every MySpace page, it's going to be in every television ad. If you want 4 more years of this atrocity, this is what you're going to end up with. So, yeah, I mean, as public image events go, I don't see it as a net positive myself. I think people want the President of the United States to be relatively firm.
Well, but now here's another point.
Please.
If you think of all the things in the first 4 years that could have been used against George Bush.
Right.
And the John Kerry
fiasco.
Election.
Yeah.
How many things were not used?
Almost all of them. You know, I mean, but Jerry, I appreciate your call. Thank you so much for calling. Listen, I mean, I can't believe that the Democrats did not 1,000 times a day go to the dichotomy between we're going to smoke them out, we're going to get Osama dead or alive. And then 6 months later, you saw a soundbite from Bush where he says, well, I don't think about him that much. I really don't care. He's not that important. You know what I mean? It's like absolutely they should have hung that like an albatross around the Republicans' neck, but they didn't because they wanted to take the high road. They wanted to be gentlemen, and when John Kerry wouldn't respond to the Swift boaters, it's the same thing. It's like we are above it all. We understand that we have to be conciliatory. We have to get along with each other. Why can't we all get along? It's like the Democratic Party's like Rodney King, except they're like Rodney King during the beating when the poor cops are beating him. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Thank you so much for calling, sir. I appreciate it. Lee is with Winds in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You're on with Johnny. Lee. Well, no Lee here, I guess.
Hello?
There's Hello? Lee. Okay.
Hi.
All right.
Lee, hi, Johnny.
Hello, Lee. How are you?
Oh, not too shabby. How are you tonight?
I'm all right. Now, why do you think Hillary had the breakdown?
Oh, gosh. I wish I could tell you. You know, Johnny, it's really, I'll tell you, I don't envy any of them. I give them all, my hat's off to all of them. I think
right.
It's an extremely tough thing to do, what they're all doing. And I really do. I have a modicum of respect for each and every one of them.
You want to know what's most fascinating about this, Lee? And thank you for
Absolutely.
Calling. What she said in the wake of when her eyes started welling up was the best thing she said since this race started. This actually counts. That's why I have emotions about this, she was saying. I care about my country. It's breaking me down. I know how she feels. When we come back, we'll talk about this some more. Wendell in from Mike Malloy. Don't go anywhere. This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell sitting in. Mike will be back tomorrow. Tomorrow is the New Hampshire primary, so you do not want to miss a minute of coverage. I can be found at tbcwra@aol.com, tbcwra@aol.com when I'm not on the radio. I'm on the Internet, and I respond to all emails generally. So we have been talking about this unusual news story out of New Hampshire the day before. Apparently Senator Clinton, her voice was breaking and her tears were welling up, was talking about how some people think elections are a game, who's up, who's down. It's about our country. It's about our future. It's about all of us together. We do all of it, each one of us, against difficult odds. We do it because we care about the country. Some of us are right. Some of us are not. Some of us are ready and some of us are not. And I think that it is unusual that the day before a make-or-break event, somebody who has come across for the bulk of their political career as very, very even-keeled, finally seemed to show a little bit of emotion. I got to tell you, though, if I'm a New Hampshire voter, and I'm not, it doesn't make me that much of a never mind. It really doesn't, because I found some of her votes to be absolutely inexplicable and abhorrent, especially on the Iraq War and especially on the Kyle Lieberman resolution as per Iran. She seems to feel that she is entitled to the job because her husband had it. She's entitled to feel that way, but I don't have to agree. However, will this apparent public breakdown help her tomorrow as she trails in most polls behind Barack Obama? We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. This has turned into quite a remarkable campaign season. On the Democratic side, we have a former First Lady who was almost coronated in advance. On the Republican side, we have a multi-gazillionaire named Romney who was blown out by a candidate who was outspent 300-1 by him in Iowa, Mike Huckabee, and is up against John McCain in New Hampshire, a guy that was written off as dead 6 months ago. I don't mean literally dead, but his campaign was dead. And it is fascinating the parallels, when you think about it, between Romney and Hillary Clinton, is they are almost perceived as inhuman, in a way, in a year when voters are desperately clinging for the idea for somebody who seems like they have a heart. Which is why this whole idea of Hillary's massive experience, which I don't see, she's the First Lady, she wasn't the president, trumps Barack Obama's Audacity of Hope, as he calls it, as his book was titled. I don't see it that way. I think that at this point, the idea of throwing all the bums out seems to be the meme and the theme in the year 2008. We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Stu, at 1240 Talk City in Sacramento, you are on with Johnny. Stu.
Hello.
Stu, what do you think, man?
Well, you know, I have to first comment that I guess Smiling Sammy Alito would say that his wife's crying probably helped him a little bit, you know. But
well, on the other hand, all he had to do was convince the Senate to confirm him. He didn't have to convince the Senate, the voters of New Hampshire.
Very true.
And the thing with the Senate is that they were going to go for his confirmation anyway. At that point, the Republicans had the majority, and the Democrats proved that they weren't going to filibuster because they were afraid the filibuster would be taken away from them if they used it against Bush's appointees. I got a question for you, Stu. Let's say you got a President Obama, 2009. John Paul Stevens says, you know, I'm 86 years old. I don't feel well. You got Justice Ginsburg who says, I've got health issues. One of the other, is it Breyer or Souter also has health issues as well. One of them has prostate cancer. All three of them decide that they want to retire at this point, and they do. And Barack Obama is President of the United States, or if it's Mrs. Clinton, or if it's John Edwards, because I got to tell you, I don't see the Republicans winning this one, but they are allowed to make the picks that they want. All of a sudden, the Republicans, however many of them are left in the Senate next year, decide to filibuster. I'd like someone to say, excuse me, there was no filibuster. Bush got Alito, Bush got Roberts, there was no filibuster. How come you're filibustering now?
Well, I think by the time that the Democrats get everything back, they won't be wielding that mojo anymore, that Texas mentality will be a thing of the past, hopefully.
You'd hope, wouldn't you? But the thing is, Stu, is that they're still Democrats, and I don't understand the Democratic Party. For the life of me, it's like, you know, you got a 27-seat edge in the House of Representatives. You can gum up everything from here. You can impeach this bastard.
And you can
tie his hands. I don't understand him either.
And the off-the-table comments, I'll never understand that. No,
Pelosi thing?
Yeah,
utterly ridiculous.
But
what I have
to say is I don't think this is going to help Mrs. Clinton. She's right now at a rally. I'm watching it on the span, as they say. But it doesn't. You know, I have a feeling that everything was just getting to her. I mean,
she just reached overload, and that was the end, huh?
It's a reality bite she just couldn't stomach.
All right. Thanks a lot, Stu. I appreciate your phone call.
Have a good night. It's nice speaking with you.
You too, Stu.
Bye-bye.
Teresa, on Sirius Satellite Radio in Quartzsite, Arizona, you're on with Johnny. Teresa. Do we have a Teresa, or is Teresa?
Yes,
there she is. Okay.
Hi. I'm calling you from Quartzsite, Arizona.
I was in Quartzsite on Friday night, driving into a maelstrom, into a monsoon. Yes,
this is so amazing.
I'm aware.
I'm from Maui originally, but I'm here for a couple of months.
Yeah.
And here is the thing: is that I'm retired now, but I've been a woman corporate executive CEO.
Yeah.
For most of my life.
Right.
And all you men are missing something here.
Okay, please.
Here's the thing. I'm not a Hillary fan.
Right.
But here is the thing, is that whether it's a man or a woman, when they say they are grateful and it precedes the teary eyes, then you need to know that something close to her heart. She said just before her eyes swelled up,
right,
I am grateful for the opportunities. And that is when everything came, because many times in my corporate life,
right,
which dealt mostly with men and men businesses,
okay,
the time that I would have any welling up is when I realized what an incredible position I had and an opportunity. And when she said that, for the first time, I've liked her.
So
I realized this is like a woman who loves her children. And boy, howdy, if somebody crosses the line, she can't help but feel emotional. She feels emotional about what she's doing and what this country's doing. The same as Obama's got this. He's a black man who's running for office.
Right.
That's an incredible opportunity. What a wonderful thing.
Okay, well, that's fine. I understand all that, Teresa. But listen to me, and this is important. It's like, yes, I can only see things through the prism of the testosterone that rages through my veins. However, I got to ask you something, Teresa. Why is it that the day before, right after polls come out, showing her trailing by 12 points, are basically thrust into her consciousness, then she starts feeling a little bit sad? I mean, you got to, from my point of view, from my vantage point, maybe because I'm a guy and I just don't understand, it would seem to me as like, that's bad news. I'm trying to get through to you people. Why won't you listen to me? That kind of thing.
That is such a wonderful testosterone. And by the way, I love testosterone thing to feel. However,
When
men also tear up when they're emotional and when they feel strongly.
That's true.
That is the time that I look at a man and say, oh, my God, this is coming from his heart. And I don't think it's when she said grateful, that's what gave me a clue, because she realized she's in the race.
But I have to tell you something, Teresa, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it.
Can I tell you why?
Well, you can't have her in office.
We cannot put her in office. Here is why.
Wow.
When we have the United States is now coming abreast, and we are seeing Muslims on one side. You cannot have a woman be a leader and as a president of the United States at this time.
Oh, I'm sorry, Teresa. That's absolutely ridiculous. I'm sorry. Benazir Bhutto was a leader of a Muslim country. Come on. That's absurd. A woman can be the leader of this country because, like, the Muslims won't respect a woman. That's ridiculous. We got 4,500 nuclear warheads. Believe me, they respect and fear us plenty in the rest of the world.
No,
that has nothing to do with it. Come on. That's ridiculous. It's unreal. Like, all of a sudden, like, I was... thank you, Teresa, for calling. I appreciate it. Goodbye. However, it amazes me that I made out to be like, oh, you're a testosterone-bearing man. You don't understand. Yet, the Muslims, all of a sudden, they can't understand because their men or the females have no say in Muslim countries, which is nonsense as well. They're secular Muslim countries as well. This is ridiculous. It's insane. You're a sexist on one hand. On the other hand, we can't have a woman because of the sexist Muslims. That's ridiculous. And if it had been a different woman besides Hillary Clinton, it wouldn't be the same issue. When we return, let's talk about this. I am Wendell, and this is Mike Malloy's show. He will be back tomorrow. I can be reached at tbcwra@aol.com. Don't go anywhere. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Johnny Wendell sitting in. I can be reached at tbcwra@aol.com. The show can be reached at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. We're talking about the New Hampshire primaries tomorrow. So far, it would appear that Barack Obama has overtaken Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton and John Edwards in this race tomorrow. Romney and McCain are neck and neck, although I would imagine that McCain is somewhat the favorite by a very small margin. I hate talking this way like it's a horse race. Is the, you know, he's 3-1, and this one's 2-1, and as they round the bend with a few lengths to go, blah, 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 blah. I hate that stuff. But it is a day to the elections. I got to tell you, I'm from Boston, and I'm a native New Englander, and I spent a lot of time in the state of New Hampshire as a kid. I've climbed almost every good-sized mountain in the state of New Hampshire. I spent my whole youth there, it would seem. And the people of New Hampshire, they're not like Vermonters. They're not like Mainers. It is a very libertarian state. And it is also a state in the last 20 years which has seen tremendous spillover from Massachusetts, because it has lower taxes and because Massachusetts has become very, very expensive, prohibitively expensive to live in. So southern New Hampshire is the repository of an awful lot of people that grew up in Massachusetts politics. They're lifelong Democrats. New Hampshire was a Republican state until this last election, when the Democrats retook the legislature for the first time in over 100 years. Both of New Hampshire's representatives are Democrats, Shea Porter and Paul Hodes. That has never happened in my lifetime. And New Hampshire is also about to add a Democratic senator. The former governor, Gene Shaheen, is probably going to beat Sununu, Bush Sr.'s former chief of staff's son. That being said, and they have a very popular Democratic governor, it's not a typically Democratic place, which is why I think Obama is doing as well as he's doing, and Hillary is doing as poorly as she is doing. Obama is the kind of Democrat that appeals to people that want something different. The kind of people that say, lived one place and moved to someplace else. Obama seems to fit that frame of mind. And also the fact that he is young, that he is fresh-faced, that he is energetic. I mean, facts are facts. When Obama did his victory speech in Iowa, it was he and Michelle Obama and their two kids, a young family. When Hillary Clinton made her concession speech, it's her, her husband, and Madeleine Albright. I mean, it's like, if I wanted the 90s back, I'll watch Seinfeld reruns. Or I'll take ecstasy and go to a rave. Well, I won't do that, but you know what I mean. You got the future and you got the past. Now, she had a bit of a moment today in Portsmouth and her eyes welled up. Do you think this is going to affect her? Do you think that people will say, wow, she's more human than I thought? I think perhaps I'll give her another look. Todd, in Coconut Grove, Florida, at Wins.
Yes, sir.
You're on with Johnny. Todd, yes. What do you think?
Well, I think watching her, a transplanted Bostonian, by the way.
Like me, okay.
Right, but watching her reminded me of her husband. I think you and I are the same kind of guys that wouldn't want to spend a hell of a lot of time with President Clinton. And, you know.
I didn't find him to be as bad a president as some people would say, nor as good as some people would say.
I'm not talking his presidency. I'm talking about the kind of guy you'd want to hang around a locker room with. He's a little bit of a fraud in that sense. So.
Yeah, well, not the picture of sincerity.
Exactly.
It's like Bill Clinton's not the kind of guy your car breaks down in his neighborhood, you're going to call him on the cell phone
exactly.
And expect he's going to show up.
And
yeah.
I have to, Stuart and Teresa really went right by them. As far as I'm concerned, she was feigning it. And I'll leave it at that, Johnny.
I don't think it's an act, Todd. I mean, I think that what is happening is the disbelief and amazement that something that she believed was going to be hers is not going to be hers. She took it for granted that because she is a Clinton, that this is going to happen. It seems only fair, after all. What kind of skills did George W. Bush have? None. Nil. Nada. It was handed to him. It's interesting, too, because what was handed to Bush in 2000 in New Hampshire was his ass was handed to him. McCain beat him by 16 points. But I got to tell you, I'm looking at polls in South Carolina. Remember, George W. Bush came back in South Carolina, had his boy Karl Rove start a whispering campaign. McCain goes crazy around Asian people. McCain has a black baby. McCain this, McCain that. All those push poll questions, and they drove down his positives and upped his negatives, and that was the end of McCain. I don't think you can do that. I mean, Republicans are more susceptible to that stuff than Democrats are. Not because Democrats are any more reasonable or they're better people. They just don't go for that kind of punch to the gut. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Todd seems to think that Hillary's tears were acting, that she was faking it. Do you think she was faking it, or do you think it was real? 800-989-1480. Preston.
Yes.
What do you think, man? Yay or nay?
Well, I think that, well, first off, I agree with a lot of the progressive criticisms of both Hillary and Bill's administration as well, and I share a lot of those criticisms.
That secret evidence law stuff, the Telecommunications Act, though, they're not good.
The sanctions on Iraq.
Oh, yeah, which were pointless. I mean, essentially, if the sanctions had been lifted in 1993, there would have been no grounds for Bush Jr. to be able to make his farcical claims.
But could I make one other point real quick?
Very quickly.
Well, she did, though. I think this also reveals a lot about the right wing that's attacking her. I mean, they're around her like a bunch of guys at a stoning, and they've been so bullying, you know, Hannity and Limbaugh and those.
Yeah,
listeners.
But you know something that's interesting about that, Preston, is that she handled those people easily with kid gloves. Now that the poll numbers come out that say that times are tough for her from the left, now she's crying, so I got to disagree. We'll be back. We'll talk about this some more. Wendell. In for Mike Malloy. We're at 800-989-1480. I'm at TBCWRA at AOL.com. Easy to remember, Todd. The Boston Celtics will rise again. Don't go anywhere.
I got a man that's more than 8 foot tall, 4 foot shoulders, and that ain't all. King size papa.
This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell, your king-size papa, sitting in Michael B. and tomorrow. We've been talking about the New Hampshire primary, of course, because it's tomorrow, and it is very, very important. Interesting thing, we're talking about this this crying didn't cry. Did Hillary cry? Did Hillary not cry? Why does this remind me of the Game 7, 1986 World Series, camera pans to the Red Sox dugout. They're going to lose to the Mets. Oh, God. You know, even though they won 2 World Series in the last 5 years, it still breaks my heart thinking of 1986. Anyway, the camera pans the Red Sox dugout, and there is Wade Boggs, a man who was a 6-time batting champion in the American League, sitting there, tears pouring out of his eyes. That didn't make him any less of a man, that Wade Boggs was crying. Just like it doesn't make Hillary Clinton any less of a firm leader if she cries every so often. And this, by the way, we're going to play you the segment, or the part of the rally that she had in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where she allegedly did the crying. This is what happened exactly. Go ahead.
It's not easy. And I couldn't do it if I just didn't, you know, passionately believe it was the right thing to do. You know, I have so many opportunities from this country. I just don't want to see us fall backwards. You know, so.
All right. There's sobbing and there's hysteria, okay? Sobbing and hysteria would be like a Tanya Harding-like breakdown. Remember her, the one who had her husband and the hitman break her opponent's leg, Nancy Kerrigan? And when she was caught, broke down, like wept like a baby, right? Or the Sally Fields accepting the Oscar. You like me! You really, really like me! All right, that's histrionic sobbing. and kind of a lousy job done of it by me, I admit. I don't make a very good crying woman, or a crying man for that matter. I'm from New England. We don't cry in New England. Wade Boggs cried in New England because he's from Florida. He isn't a real New Englander. But New Englanders don't cry. We just bite our lip and suffer and, you know, whatever we do, go into therapy or, you know, beat up our neighbors, drive drunk, stuff like that. But we don't cry. The reason this thing is perceived as so radical in its way is that this is a woman who had an aura of iciness about her, which all of a sudden fell away. And in her words, it's because of love of country. People don't understand how grateful she is, how much she loves America. That I don't doubt. But I got to tell you, me, being a heartless guy with testosterone pouring and coursing through my veins like a mighty river, all I see is somebody that thought they were going to win who is now going to lose and is upset. And she's a little upset, but at least she makes sense when she talks. Her husband, on the other hand, has taken to this seemingly inevitable defeat where it was going to be victory about a month ago. And by the way, you should look at these Gallup numbers. On the 15th of December, Clinton was leading Obama by 18 percentage points. They're tied nationally now. Tied. Lost an 18-point lead in 3 weeks. That's not good. Anyway, this is what her husband said about why Hillary is having trouble right now. Go ahead.
We can't be a new story. I'm sorry. There's nothing we can do. I can't make her younger, taller, male. There's lots of things I can't do.
If she were younger, taller, and male, you know, like Barack Obama, she'd be a more attractive candidate, right? I think that's a load of crap. I think that the reason that Democrats who vote in the Democratic Party and left-leaning independents don't like this woman is they don't like her voting record. They don't like her record on the war. They don't like the triangulation. They didn't really like a lot of the things her husband did. But on the other hand, her husband made the right wing crazy, so everybody loved him for it. They impeached him. They turned him into a martyr. They loved him for it because they impeached him for crapola. That's what they loved about the Clintons. I mean, I got to admit, I loved the latter half of the 1990s. I was swimming in dough, too. But you can't tell me the dot-com boom had that much to do with William Jefferson Clinton. Oh, what a lucky man he is. His great and florid promises of rebuilding the country's infrastructure in 1992. Oh, that went right out the window. And why? Because his financial advisors told him, one of the worst of which was Alan Greenspan, the chairman of the Fed, you got to balance the budget. Balancing the budget is most important because if you don't, the bond markets will overreact and we'll have more inflation and we'll never get out of this recession. Yeah. If Clinton had said no to the Deficit Reduction Act in 1993 and had spent more money on the country's infrastructure, particularly in the middle of the country, and not signed NAFTA, the Democrats would never have been buried in 1994. They made a lot of bad political decisions. And her voting on Kyle Lieberman, the one which basically said, Bush, the green light we gave you in Iraq is one long boulevard, a green light into Iran. She voted yay. She never should have voted for that thing. And she voted for it. That's what did it for me. I'm never voting for this woman. She has no sense. It's one thing when the country was smarting from the events of 9/11, 2001, when everybody in America, well, not me, but an awful lot of people in America, like, yeah, we want revenge, want to go kick some ass, want to go kick some Muslim ass, we don't care what country, as long as it's Muslim, so long as it's in the Middle East, throw a dart at the Middle East, boom, we don't care, kick somebody's ass. And these senators, Kerry and Edwards among them, went along with the AUMF. A big mistake, but they were covering themselves politically. That one I can almost give you a gimme on, although the people of Iraq certainly wouldn't agree. However, to vote yay, to even begin to authorize the slightest amount of ability for Bush to declare war on Iran over fictional nuclear weapons, which, by the way, even if Iran had nuclear weapons, ain't none of our business. You think they're going to launch them on us or on Israel? I don't think so. You see, people in power, they don't believe any of this jiggery-pokery, this mumbo-jumbo about afterlives and raptures and 72 virgins. They spread that palaver around about the ignoramuses that swallow that stuff up. But all they know is, I got mine in this life, baby. I want to live long, and I want to live tall, and I want to live good. Be they Bush or be they Ahmadinejad, don't make no difference. They don't want to be nuked. And that's what makes me crazy about the idea that you would greenlight more expansionism in the Middle East. It's like, no, baby. It's miraculous that you got the go-ahead in Iraq and look at what you did. No, we are going to take away all your toys. We're going to tie your hands. We don't care if Pelosi says impeachment's off the table. We will tell you what's off the table. There'll be no more aggression. Hillary Clinton could have done that by saying no to Kyle Lieberman. And she didn't. And that's why I have no support for her. She thought that look, I'm a woman. I got to play tough. I got to be a hard ass. I can't let people think that I'm a pushover. I'm going to be just like Iron Maggie Thatcher was in England in the 1980s. Go pick on the Falklands, the Maldives Islands off of Argentina. Go kick the poor Argentinian army's butt. My God, the Los Angeles Police Department could have beaten the Argentine army in a war. But it gave England its pride back. Nobody pushes us around. The sun may have set on the British Empire a long time ago, but with Mrs. Thatcher, it's coming back. Well, I can't believe Hillary embodies the same idiotic idea. We don't want to have an American empire. I don't want an American empire. I don't like the idea of 700 American military bases all around the world. That's a bunch of my dollars and my peers going to waste. How come Hillary Clinton didn't say anything about that? I mean, I know she wouldn't. I know Barack won't. John Edwards, maybe. Kucinich, definitely. None of them have that much spine when it comes to this. But it wouldn't have been that hard for her to simply say, I vote ixnay on Kyle Lieberman. And that's what did it for me. And I got to tell you one thing that makes me completely crazy about Democrats. The idea that you are not a right-to-lifer automatically means you're okay. That you are, quote, pro-choice means you're all right. Who cares? What does that have to do with anything? That's an irrelevancy. Like Dianne Feinstein, one of my senators here in California, she's pro-choice. We got to keep her in power because she's pro-choice. Well, what happened with Alito and Roberts, who were not pro-choice? Did she filibuster either of them? No, she didn't. That's why I could never vote for Hillary Clinton or Dianne Feinstein or the rest. Abortion, to me, it's one issue out of many. Now, when we come back, let's talk about the craziness of these Clintons thinking that they own the White House, the sadness of the woman who ain't going to get it, the future of our country for real. Oh, yeah, and I've had a lot of opportunities in America, too, people. But I ain't crying over it. Wendell, Mike Malloy Show, 800-989-1480. Don't go anywhere. This is the Mike Malloy Show, and I shout, because I'm Johnny Wendell. Mike will be in tomorrow evening to talk about the New Hampshire primaries. It'll probably be pretty much over by the time he gets in. Obama is likely to win. I think McCain is pulling away somewhat from Romney as a Republican. That doesn't make me know, never mind, because Huckabee wins in South Carolina. Super Tuesday, all those southern states that Huckabee carries. Oh, the Republicans must be panicking when they think about a guy that looks like a cross between Gomer Pyle and Kevin Spacey as their front runner. Shazam! I'm going to be the Republican nominee for president. I mean, that, they are freaking out. It's funny the Republicans freaking out about this stuff, too, because Huckabee, the Baptist minister, went to Ogallala Waka Wooka 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 Baptist Minister College in Arkansas. He can recite the Bible with his head in a bucket of water and his feet up in the air, all that stuff. And he appeals to the people that they have been courting for the last 30 years. Only he's a real one. He'll give them what they want. They hate that. It's like, no, 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 no. Let's be nice to the fundies, evangelicals. They'll go out, they'll man the phone banks. They'll send out emails. They'll vote for us. They'll give us money. But don't actually ever give them anything. Now that they got their boy Huckabee, they're freaking out because they know everybody who isn't an evangelical hates the guy. Oh, what a tangled web they have woven. Die Partie Republikanische. But Hillary, you know, Hillary had a bit of a breakdown today. Hillary, by the way, still leads Obama in delegates. Did you know this? Because she is superdelegates. Superdelegates are party apparatchiks in the Democratic Party, elected officials, hangers-on, pundits, people that got their foot in the door, and she's ahead of him. In fact, by a considerable margin, but if he keeps winning the primaries, these superdelegates are uncommitted. They'll end up in Obama's hands. But listen to what she says here. This is fascinating. Okay, and we're going to talk about this in the bottom of the hour. Facing the prospect of defeat in tomorrow's primary, Hillary Clinton just made her strongest suggestion yet that the next president may face a terrorist attack, which is pretty much a sure thing, and that she would be the best person to handle it. She pointed out the day after Gordon Brown took office as the British Prime Minister in the wake of Tony Blair, there was a failed attempt at a double bombing in London and in Glasgow. She said, I don't think it was by accident that Al-Qaeda decided to test the new prime minister. They watch our elections closely as we do, maybe more than we do. Let's not forget you're hiring a president not to do what the candidate says during the election. You want a president to be there when the chips are down. In other words, the scary terrorists will attack us if we don't elect Hillary. She pulled the Rudy Giuliani crapola. If it's not for me, those crazy Islamo-fascists are going to destroy everything. I got news for you. Yes, they do follow our elections. Yes, they are well aware of the fact that via attrition they can wear the American public's desire for war down to nothing, pretty much the same way they did to the Russian public in the 1980s, which coincidentally caused the dissolution of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. I got to tell you, those hundreds of thousands of Red Army soldiers that trundled back from Afghanistan, whooped, beaten down like dogs, coming home and telling their neighbors and friends, Andre, Dmitry, everything Pravda Tass tell you, great big lie, is all a load of crapola. That's what did it to them. They didn't have any money, and they had a beaten-down army. That was the end. We got a beaten-down military right now. We're in debt to everybody in the rest of the world. We could dissolve the way the Soviet Union dissolved. Now you got Hillary Clinton saying, I got to tell you something. Those al-Qaeders, those Islamo-fascists, they watch our elections. You need to stand up to them like as a tough person like me. Well, on the other hand, the tough person like her realized she ain't going to win today and had a bit of a sniffly snoo. So somewhere in a cave, some al-Qaeda guy is going, well, you know, we attack. Hillary's going to cry like a baby, the box tops, 1968. Probably not, though. I think that she overestimates how much attention they pay to whomever is in charge in America, and they pay a lot of attention to American presence in their countries, like most people, out of sight, out of mind. Muslims no different than the rest of us. When we return, we will talk about the Hillary thing. We will talk about the Clinton thing, the Clinton mystique, with the 90s, all that. We will also talk about an event that happened today in the Middle East that was somewhat remarkable and alarming. But guess what? You probably didn't hear much about it in the stinking mainstream media. But it is something. When we return, we're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. That is our number. It's been a most pleasant 4 days sitting in with you here for Mike Malloy. I can always be reached, by the way, at tbcwra@aol.com. tbcwra@aol.com. And we're at 1-800-989-1480. 1-800-989-1480. Hillary wants to be the tough guy when it comes to terrorism, but by the same token, she's a soft, wonderful woman who breaks down over love of country in a little place in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. What a rich and varied human being she has turned out to be, huh? I am Wendell, and I am in for Mike Malloy. He will be back tomorrow on the TBCWRA at AOL.com. We're at 800-989-1480. Wendell, in for Malloy, and don't you dare go no place, no how, no way.
How? She might be my cat. I'm just letting it all hang out. And she's a brick house. Oh, that lady's back. That's a fact. Ain't holding nothing back. Oh, she's a brick.
This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell sitting in. Mike will be back tomorrow. We've been talking about the New Hampshire primary, about Hillary versus Obama, McCain versus Romney. It's funny, Mike Huckabee won in Iowa. He disappeared. He's polling at 12-13%. Not that many evangelicals in New Hampshire. Funny thing about New Hampshire, too, is in the very northern part of the state where the White Mountains go to the Canadian border, very, very heavy libertarian sentiment up there. Ron Paul, I think, is going to do a little bit better than people think in New Hampshire, but probably not well enough to break a 15% threshold. We're talking about Hillary getting tough on terrorists and her breakdown or lapse, if you will, in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, today, when apparently her eyes welled up and her voice cracked, and she said that she is grateful for all the opportunities America's given her, to her. Why treating this like a horse race? People have ups and downs. Some people are ready to be president, some aren't. We are presuming that she means that Barack Obama not ready to be president of the United States. I think the motivation for her sorrow is not an overwhelming wave of gratitude, but maybe the realization that what she thought was inevitable is not, that Barack Obama is likely to be the Democratic nominee. Whether or not he actually wins in November, probably the Democrat is the favorite. Even Barack Obama, 47-year-old, he'll be 48 then, black man from Chicago. Because at this point, I think Americans are more or less willing to overlook just about anything that their petty lizard brain prejudices may bring up, because they cannot tolerate the status quo any longer. So what do you think of Hillary's moment today? Was it real? Was it staged? Does she know it's over? Is that why she broke down a little? We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. MC in
Hi.
Boston, Massachusetts. You're on with Johnny, your fellow Bostonian.
Hi, thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it. I saw that about 10 times tonight. I was flipping channels. I was watching Keith Olbermann, and then everybody, Bill O'Reilly. I'm just flipping back and forth. I saw that. I think it was real, and she feels that she can let her guard down now, because she knows it's definitely over. This is her. It's over. It's a swan song. This is her moment. She can be honest. Yes, she should have done that right along. Her problem was from the beginning. I never thought she should have run in the first place.
Because
I knew the Republicans, they wanted her. They wanted her.
Yeah, but by the same token,
they knew they could beat her.
MC, by the same token, don't you think that the Republican thinking is like, I can't believe the Democrats are going to put up a guy named Barack Hussein Obama, which sounds like Hussein Osama. He's a black man. He isn't even 50 years old, has no achievements whatsoever. Don't you think that the Republicans are salivating and licking their chops over the prospect of fighting him?
No, not at all, because they can't compete with what he has. He has momentum, he has inspiration, and he does represent change. Who are they going to put forward? McCain? He's been there forever. He agrees with Bush on every insanity that he wants to do. He said recently on the talk show, you know they're going to play, I hope the Democrats use this against
him. We'll be in Iraq for 100 years.
He said we could stay there 10,000 years in Iraq and Americans wouldn't care as long as we don't have casualties. That's insane.
What is he talking about? As long as we don't have casualties? Iraq has casualties. And by the way, MC, one thing that McCain and the rest of these people don't seem to understand, you keep displacing Iraqis. Do you know where they're going to end up eventually? In the United States. They'll be repatriated here. When I tell every American that, every Republican that, because I got Republican friends, even in Massachusetts, where you are now, they're like, never. We never allow such a thing. I go, oh, but you will have to because you're the ones who destroyed their country, my friend. You have a moral obligation to take them in. Same as you have a moral obligation to take the people of the Sudan in, too, because you wouldn't do anything in Darfur. Same deal. No, absolutely not. You know, they got their own problems. Let them work them out. Oh, yeah, let them work them out. We haven't lifted a finger to help the people in Darfur and Iraq. We made a wretched situation with Bill Clinton's ridiculous sanctions going on for 8 years worse by invading those poor people.
That's true. I was mad with Clinton over those sanctions. That was so wrong. I was mad with him that he didn't intervene in Rwanda. I thought that was horrible. I used to listen to the BBC every morning, and I go, what are they talking about over there? How come no one's doing anything? They kept talking about Hutsis and Tutsis. I go, okay, this sounds kind of weird. But why isn't it out there in the media? Why isn't Bill Clinton?
Why? Because the European community no longer has that much of a connection to Rwanda. I got to tell you something, MC. Rwanda was still a British colony because Uganda, Rwanda, and Kenya were a little triangle of British possessions back in the 20th century. If they were the Hutus and Tutsis were killing themselves under the British rule, you know they would have pulled them apart. By the way, the greatest genocide of this decade is not in Iraq. It's not in Darfur, not in Rwanda. You know what it is? The Congo. 3 million people have been killed in that country. Have we done anything? No! We don't care. We don't care at all. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. That is our number. Hillary Clinton. When I think about the good love you gave me, I cry like a baby. No, that's excessive. She teared up a little. She didn't cry like a baby. Well, maybe a very well-restrained, well-behaved baby. Dave, on XM, you're on with Johnny. Oh, you disappeared. I'm sorry, Dave. Joy, on INET in Santa Cruz, California. You're on with Johnny.
Yeah, just recovering from the storms.
Oh, yeah, I drove through it, Joy. It was brutal.
58 hours without electricity.
Oh, my God. No, being blown around like sagebrush was awful. What's on your mind?
Well, I had about two comments.
Yes.
One, I'm not voting for Hillary. She's not my girl.
Uh-huh.
But I think the reason she was crying is probably partially what the last caller just said. I think she's also disappointed.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And I think she's exhausted. I mean, this is grueling.
I mean, what you saw, like, in the days before the Iowa caucuses happened, that Romney was making, I mean, he was flip-flopping so much that you knew it wasn't his natural flip-floppy position. He just couldn't remember what he was saying anymore. Everybody was making mistakes and faux pas, and they were all beat. I think in her case, though, it's like, this was supposed to be mine.
Yeah.
I stood by my man. My husband humiliated me in the 90s playing footsie with Monica Lewinsky, and I didn't divorce him because I knew it would have been impossible to carry on with my political career. I kept it together. By the fact that she stayed with him made Bill Clinton look a lot better in the public's eyes. And the payback, what payback? This is an interesting thing, Joy. What a lot of people don't grasp about politics is that it is an awful lot like a movie or a TV show or a radio show or a song. Politics is based in intangibles. It's a gut feeling that people have about somebody when they see them. They look at them. They resonate with them. And what MC from Boston was talking about made sense is, Barack Obama, for whatever reason, comes across not just as affable, but there's something that he gives off a good feeling. Hillary Clinton never had that. Her husband had it. Of course, he squandered most of it in the 8 years that he was in power. but it's the intangibles. It's like I've written hundreds of songs in my life. I was a musician for 25 years. You never know which ones are going to be good or bad. They feel like they come out of you. They flow out okay. You go play them on stage, and people start going wild, and they're singing along with the chorus. Before the song's over, you know you got a hit. On the other hand, if they get up to take a leak or go get a drink or talk to their friends, you know it's a bomb. The only way to know is to check it out, to test it out on people, to try it out. And Hillary tried it out in Iowa. It didn't work. And it looks like she's going to try it out in the Granite State tomorrow. Same thing. We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Chad, over the iNet, also in Boston, Massachusetts. You're on with Johnny. Chad, what's on your mind?
Hey, Johnny, what's going on?
A little of this, a little of that. What do you think?
Well, I know he's not a member himself, Barack Obama, but his wife and most of the members of her family are on the CFR and
the Council
much,
for Foreign Relations?
Yes, the Council on Foreign Relations. And,
okay.
Pretty much every candidate, Democrat, Republican, besides
Kucinich
Ron
and Paul,
Kucinich and Gravel, who's disappeared,
well,
they're all
yes.
members or connected in some way to
now,
the CFR.
Now, Chad, explain to the world why this is necessarily a good or bad thing.
Well, why this is necessarily good or bad?
No, I mean, people. You know, I've seen this a lot. This has been floating around the Internet for quite a while, Chad. People say, well, you know, Obama's wife is tied to the Council on Foreign Relations. Why is this a terrible thing?
I mean, if it's not just that she is, it's almost every candidate.
But Michelle Obama's not running for anything, Chad. I mean,
no,
that's my point.
She's his wife, and...
Well, okay, Hillary was Bill Clinton's wife, and back in the 1990s, she didn't have that much effect on her. She couldn't keep him cheating on her. You know what I mean? It's like, I understand what you're saying, and I recognize that it's an amorphous group that doesn't answer to anybody, that seems to have a lot of sway in our foreign policy, Chad. But until there are more defined ways of saying how much effect they actually have, it's a moot point. I can't believe you dug this song up, man. You are the king of the verbal cue. I say, so, I'm going to have to come up with some insane verbal cue for a song I know you don't have just to beat you with this, Ian. And I will. I will. And if I don't, I'll weep in a cafe in Portsmouth. My name is Johnny Wendell. I am in for Mike Malloy. I'm at 800-989-1480 and tbcwra@aol.com. Oh, I got an idea. Don't go anywhere. The Mike Malloy Show. I can't believe you were dragging out these songs, man. Crying. Oh, Johnny Wendell here. You're cracking me up, man. It should be explained that I'm in Los Angeles, and Ian and Billy, who are running the show, are in Phoenix. And they have completely taken this thing out of my hands and have turned it into a mega farce. It is insane. Of course, I'm laughing at it, and I completely approve of it, but... I have been chastised by one of our listeners off the air who informs me that under no condition, under no circumstances that she saw, was Hillary in fact crying. She sniffled a little, her eyes welled up. All right, fine. You know something? I'm man enough to admit that I was wrong. She did not break down and cry. She waffled a little. But for Hillary Clinton, that's a big deal. I mean, you're talking about somebody who seemed completely unflappable no matter what. And just to be asked, how do you get out of the house in the morning and all that stuff, that's what did it to her. It's, you know, That's a little bit strange. We're at 800-989-1480. That is our number. Anna, in St. Louis, Missouri, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, Johnny. Love the show. You are a trip. And I agree, Ian's the man.
I'm telling you something. If I was in the next room from him like I was last week, I would be pounding on the glass like an angry Sisabil. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, I agree with you in regard to the fact that the elections are a referendum on the previous administration.
Yes.
And emotions play a powerful role.
It's not just that. It's that people have a visceral reaction to Hillary Clinton where I think a lot of people that think that they like her like what they project onto her, and a lot of people who don't like her see aspects of her that really don't exist, you know? Like, she's this weird kind of tabula rasa, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like she's a blank slate that you can put everything and anything that you want to think about the woman on, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that she is so determinately centrist, which I hate. You know something? I got to admit, as much as I really loathe George W. Bush, and frankly, I hope his entire family ends up in prison in the next 5 years, Cheney's too, but the guy was no centrist. He went for it. That's admirable in a kind of Hitlerian, disgusting, Mao Zedong, Stalinist, Franco kind of way. Among Americans, he went for it. He saw his chance and he took it. So you knew where he stood on things and you knew what kind of a person he was. If you were on the right, he was an unstoppably wonderful, magnificent person. If you're like me, he's a hateful frat boy who deserves to have a boot up his butt. But you knew where he stood. Hillary Clinton can be painted any which way by anybody who looks at her because she's a centrist. And centrism, at this point, who needs it? Dave.
Yes, thank you.
In St. Augustine, how are you, Dave?
Yeah, good. How about yourself?
I can't complain. What do you think of this?
Good. Well, I think that I wouldn't hold Ms. Clinton's brief show of emotion, Johnny, against her. That just shows she's human. But I do hold her divisive, fear-mongering, Islamo-fascist follow-up statement against her. That's straight out of the Dick Cheney playbook.
Well, the one that I read to you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's ridiculous. The idea that, well, you know, Al-Qaeda is waiting for a change of command so they can hit us and see how we'll react. First of all, as you well know, Dave, United States Air Force and Navy are still a very powerful, pulverizing force. More likely than not, if an attack comes from an Al-Qaeda-based entity, they're likely to get hurt an awful lot worse by the next president than Bush ever did, because Bush, frankly, in my opinion, was in bed with Al-Qaeda the whole time.
Yes, I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, George Bush never had a greater friend in this world, in my humble opinion, than Osama bin Laden. True.
I agree. Yeah, it goes back to family connections. I think all candidates are overworked, exhausted, and show it. You saw it in Obama's face also. I support, Johnny, the only major Democratic candidate with experience who's a populist, John Edwards.
So you're an Edwards man.
Yeah, he shunned the big-time corporate and lobbyist money, or unlike either Clinton or Obama, and he deserves the support of all working Americans, male or female.
Well, you know, I would be more inclined to vote for him or like him if he hadn't voted for the AUMF against his own best interests. By his own admission, he was talked into voting for this thing. Ginger in Stuart, Florida, you're on with Johnny.
Well, my battery about to go out now, Johnny. I've been waiting 30 minutes to speak.
I had no idea, Ginger. If I did, I would have rushed to your side.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Anyway.
Wait a minute. Ginger's not liking me. Should I cry? Ginger, you know, we've been friends for
so
long.
Well, that's a human. That'd be a human thing to do.
I know. What do you think of all this, anyway?
Well, first of all, Johnny, I'm looking at how hypocritical these so-called American people are, whether they are callers in, whether they are independent, Democratic, news reporters.
Yeah.
The change thing is like they're saying, oh, well, we're going to get a new leaf on life.
Right.
Well, why is it that if they're trying to achieve something, be successful in life, why are they pointing their finger at the person who has achieved something in life? That reminds me of school days. The kids.
Wait. Except for one thing, Ginger. Hillary Clinton's achievement outside of becoming a successful attorney are all predicated on marrying William Jefferson Clinton. If she had not been the first lady of the country already, nobody would know who she was. She never would have been senator from New York. But why would anybody? Was she a ward healer? Did she raise through the ranks? No, she was Bill Clinton's wife. When we come back, let's talk about the Middle East. And not a particularly bizarre incident, but an unusual incident all the same that occurred today. Probably got drowned out by Hillary's tears in the news. You're going to want to stay tuned. This is Mike Malloy Show, Johnny Wendell sitting in, 800-989-1480. I'm at tbcwra@aol.com. Don't go anywhere.
I got a man that's more than 8 foot tall, 4 foot shoulders, and that ain't all. King size papa.
This is the Mike Malloy Show.
He's my king size papa.
And I'm your king size papa, Johnny.
I take the door off the hinges when my baby comes to call.
Johnny Wendell in for Mike Malloy. Mike be in tomorrow. His vacation will be over. Tomorrow is the New Hampshire primaries. Barack Obama leading in polls for the Democrats. John McCain leading for the Republicans. McCain by about 3 or 4 points. Barack Obama over Hillary Clinton by 12. John over John Edwards by about 19. Now, in all the foo-for-raw in the news today about the New Hampshire primaries and the exhausted ragtag band of tired candidates, the big news outside of the United States was that according to the Pentagon, the American Navy, a three-ship U.S. Navy convoy specifically passing through the Straits of Hormuz, were attacked by an Iranian fleet of high-speed boats who charged at the three-ship convoy and threatened to blow them up. No shots were fired, as an Iranian official in Tehran said the incident amounted to nothing special. It's normal. In fact, from Al-Bawaba, which is a Middle Eastern news source, a foreign ministry spokesman by the name of Mohammed Ali Husseini says the act is normal. There's something normal taking place every now and then for each party, and the problem is settled after both parties identify each other. He says that similar incidents had happened in the past and ended as soon as both sides recognized who each other were. Well, that's not what we got from the United States news media. That is when they weren't talking about the New Hampshire primaries. According to the Bush administration, Iranian actions amounted to a dangerous provocation and said the Iranians may believe they were acting defensively in the narrow waterway that is heavily trafficked by ships, including oil vessels. It raised new tensions between Washington and Tehran. There are three warships, a cruiser, a destroyer, and a frigate, were going through the Straits of Hormuz on a routine passage inside international waters. They were approached by five high-speed vessels believed to be from the Revolutionary Guard Corps' Navy. The Revolutionary Guard's part of the Iranian military. Look, one thing that you got to realize before we get too deep into this story, the Straits of Hormuz are this tiny, tiny little passageway in between the Arabian Peninsula and Iran, and it is wide enough for about 6 miles, a width of 6 miles, and it is the only way that oil gets out of the Persian Gulf via boat. It is excruciatingly small. It is one of the most strategic, it is probably, in reality, the most strategically valuable piece of land in the world, and that there has never been a serious incident there, really, one that brought the oil trade to a grinding halt, is miraculous. However, according to Vice Admiral Kevin Cosgriff, the Fifth Fleet, which patrols the Gulf, is based nearby Bahrain. They took a series of maneuvers. They were intending to fire on the boats, which approached within 500 yards of the three U.S. ships, but the Iranians suddenly fled back to the shore. Cosgriff wasn't precise about the U.S. ship's location. They were 3 miles outside Iran's territorial waters, which extend 12 miles from the shore, headed in a westerly direction after they had passed through the very narrow parts of the Hormuz Straits. According to Cosgrift, two of the boats were observed dropping objects in the water, generally in the path of the final ship in the formation, the Ingram, which is a frigate. These objects were white box-like objects and floated, and obviously we passed them by safely. They weren't retrieved, so we don't know what they were. But it was blown into a gigantic story in the media this morning, even though the Iranian Foreign Ministry said nothing of the sort of any importance went down. And according to the Center for American Progress, there is such an absence of hard information about these intentions, is that they viewed the presence of the American ships as a potential threat and were warning them away from Iran. However, the State Department spokesman Sean McCormick said the U.S. would confront hostile Iranian acts that were detrimental to U.S. interests and those of the allies in the region, and called on Iran to halt any provocative actions. Look, this kind of thing in a very, very tight little area is bound to happen all the time. I find it very, very peculiar, however, that this happens on the day that Bush alights in the Middle East, in Israel. Do you know that our president's in Israel with a 10,000-man police guard? Everybody within 6 miles of where Bush is staying was booted out of their hotels. Do you know this? Yeah. King George, the great dictator of the United States, has taken over the state of Israel. As he's landing in Israel, all of a sudden the U.S. Navy and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Navy are mixing it up in the Straits of Hormuz, despite the fact that there has been an enormous U.S. naval presence in that area for going on 15-plus years. And yet, mirabile dictu, out of nowhere, all of a sudden, as if by magic, we have an international incident on our hands. I find it really, really, I got to tell you, this is so depressing to me to admit this. I can't believe that I am looking at Al Bawaba, which is a Middle Eastern news information source, and I automatically find them 100 times as credible as the U.S. news media in this. And why? Because I'm one of these people that believes that the most logical explanation for something tends to be the one that's true. Occam's razor. You know about that, Occam's razor. What tends to be the most obvious thing is the most likely thing is likely to be the true thing in the absence of true evidence. Well, we don't have any evidence that they were dropping mines. We don't have any evidence that they were dropping bombs. Also, apparently, they shooed back, they hide back, they effed back to the coast of Iran to safety rather than doing anything. If these were, in fact, suicide bombers, they probably would have kept on going until they hit the Ingram, wouldn't they? But they didn't. And the Iranian Navy says, this stuff happens all the time. We identified each other. We're good. But that's not what has been going on in Washington. We have the government ranting and raving ceaselessly about Iranian nuclear interests. We have the government ranting and raving ceaselessly about how Iran is backing foreign fighters in Iraq. I got news for you. I read the Iraq Study Group report. Page 28 states specifically that most of the foreign fighters in Iraq are Sunnis, not Shia. Shia come from Iran, not Sunnis. They're Sunnis. They're trained in Saudi Arabia. Over half of the so-called foreign fighters in Iraq are from Saudi Arabia or Libya. They're Sunnis. And yet we're supposed to believe this stuff. We're supposed to believe that we want a Shia-friendly government booted out of power in favor of Sunnis. No, we do not. And yet this is the crap, this is the pabulum that they spoon-feed us all the time. Question is this. You think Bush and his minions were trying to provoke Iran into an attack on the U.S. Navy? We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Looks that way to me. You're talking about one of the narrowest waterways in the world from which convoys filled with oil pass through constantly. You can't tell me that any kind of behavior from the Iranian side wasn't monitored and isn't monitored at least by aircraft, if not satellite, 24 hours at a time. They didn't know this was going on. Bush is in the Middle East. He's in Israel. He's with Ehud Barak, their defense minister, who's saying, we will keep you up to date on the nuclear problems that we have with Iran. Oh? What nuclear problems? I saw the national intelligence estimate. In the last 5 years, they've made no so-called progress in building a nuclear weapon. Their nuclear interests are to create nuclear power for that country so they can sell their oil. And yet, this is the stuff that we come up with now. What do you think? You think we're trying to provoke them? We've been trying for a long, long time. We've been sending search and destroy missions over the border into Iran for quite some time now. We have accused them of being the major manufacturer of IEDs with no particular proof. Oh, well, some of the serial numbers of the parts come from Iran. Yeah. On the other hand, you left a bunch of dumps unprotected for years. The local scavengers are building weapons out of them. What kind of surprise is that? I think that we're doing a little provoking to spread the war into Iran. And this is the last gasp. Oh, I can't believe you dragged this out, Ian. You are cruel. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. That is our number. You think the saber rattling in the Persian Gulf and the Straits of Hormuz is targeted to match Bush's trip to Israel to let the Israelis know that we will go to war on their behalf, with their behalf? It's beginning to look that way. Sad, huh? 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480, that is our number. We're not talking about Hillary anymore, okay? So you can put down your Hillary doll and take your voodoo pins out of them, okay? My name is Wendell, and I am not in the Navy. And I'm in for Mike Malloy. We're at 800-989-1480. Don't go anywhere. It's that time. So don't worry, Wendell, in for Mike Malloy. Mike will be in tomorrow. Trying to keep my cool here over this kind of depressing news from the Straits of Hormuz. Apparently, the American military is claiming that a bunch of speedboats were attacking a frigate, a destroyer, and a cruiser, and then turned around after dropping white boxes in the water. Oh, that doesn't pass the smell test at all. Bush is in Israel. Israel is agitating for the U.S. to foment some kind of strike on Iran because Israel fears Iran. And even though this was way, way back at the beginning of my very life, I know enough about history to remember that a phony baloney incident at sea led to the Gulf of Tonkin resolution opposed by only two American senators, and thusly to a massive expansion of the American presence in Vietnam, which led to 58,000 dead Americans and 2.5 million dead Vietnamese. So when we hear about stuff like this, this incident in the Straits of Hormuz with these speedboats, you may just, you know, poo-poo it off, the Iranians are. But we kind of have a history of this sort of thing, so I'm telling you, today is a day you may want to mark down in your calendars, history-wise. Are we trying to provoke the Iranians to get the war that Bush and his Israeli allies seem to so desperately want? It's kind of looking that way to me. If these Iranian speedboats were serious about ramming an American frigate or destroyer, they would have gone full speed ahead and hit them or been blown out of the water. They weren't. If anything, they were warning them that they might be getting a little too close to Iranian territorial waters. But I got to tell you something, if they were really serious about attacking the American Navy, A, it's suicidal, and B, Iran actually has submarines. They have these diesel-powered submarines that they got from Germany. They also have these missiles, these silkworm missiles that can sink ships in the Persian Gulf. If that's what they intended to do, that's probably what they would have done, which would have resulted in massive American airstrikes on their bases in Iran, which the Iranians don't want, but some Americans do, don't they? 800-989-1480. Mary in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You're on with Johnny.
Hi, Johnny. How are you doing?
What do you think, Mary?
Well, I agree with what you said so far about this incident today, and I think a lot of it relates to the fact that our media is pretty bad in this country. You have to go and read British papers and
I thought it was kind of shocking that I had to go to Al-Bawaba to get, like, the Iran's version of this.
Yeah.
And, which is weird, too, because they changed this. I don't know if you knew this. Yahoo had this big drum-beaten jingoist story in the morning. They released another one a couple hours ago, which had Al-Bawaba's side and things. I think maybe people are beginning to realize, you know something? The WMD thing that you tried, that you put over on us in 2002, 2003, you're going to have to do better than that.
Yeah.
And I think people now know. I mean, maybe it's me trying not to be cynical, you know what I mean? Or trying to be positive about this sort of thing. But after the Gulf of Tonkin, after the WMD thing, what can you think but this is what they want? I mean, they've been slathering for a war with Iran. What was it like the neocons were saying 5 years ago? Little guys go to Baghdad. Real men go to Tehran. If their war in Iraq had succeeded, they would have taken a right from Baghdad and gone right into Tehran. Can you imagine the mess we got now is pretty bad, but that one would have been majorly disastrous. Lawrence in Seattle, you're on with Johnny. Yes. There you are, son. You have something to say. I guess you don't. I guess we lost you. Kathleen in Austin, Texas.
Hey, Johnny.
Hey,
really good to hear you.
Yeah, thank you.
Listen, I have 3 points to make about this, if you would let me.
Sure.
Number one, as you know, we have a history of, you know, so-called enemies.
Provocative acts, yes.
Well, yeah. The point I'm making is it may very well have been, you know, some young lieutenant, some young captain, whatever. They just, you know, they've got to go and you know, kind of prick the beast that U.S. being their beast.
Right.
You know, it happened in Korea, it happens in Guantanamo and Cuba, it happens all the time.
Happened
they just
in the 70s,
go and do what
happened
they
in the 70s
do.
Off of, what was it? It was in Southeast Asia, same thing.
Yeah.
When Gerald Ford was president, yeah.
They happened.
Yeah.
And then, so number two, the role of the media is, well, we have this huge battle going with the administration and the Pentagon and Congress, and the Pentagon or certain people get to the media before anybody else does.
And they claim we got this big thing going on. And it's interesting, Kathleen, at the Pentagon, they're always angling for more money, for more budgets for their side of the military budgets. Like, see, we need more money for the Navy because look at the misery that we're in now. You know, I mean, it's amazing that at the end of all of this, it boils down to nothing more than dollars and cents. Are we looking at another Gulf of Tonkin incident here? Are we looking at another Pueblo incident that was in Korea? Are we looking at another Remember the Maine, the Spanish-American War of 1898? The Maine was blown up in Cuba. Of course, it turned out to be a boiler that blew up. It wasn't Spanish revolutionaries. We went to war. We ended up in the Philippines for 14 years fighting as a result. What do you think? We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Is this more provocation, or is this the real deal? Wendell in from Malloy, don't go anywhere.
Asking where you might have gone from what I knew before. Some things are worth fighting for.
All aboard!
I know the speculation, and I read the front page, so I hear the voices, but I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is I hear the voices.
Oh, this is the Mike Malloy Show. Johnny Wendell sitting in. Ian, you are just too much, man. I got to send a shout out to Ian and Billy, who've been my crew for the last 4 days. Oh, they're just too much. I salute you. Ozzy salutes you. Ozzy Nelson salutes you. Oh, my God. That's funny. That's a good one, man. We're talking about this incident in the Strait of Hormuz. Supposedly, there was a near conflagration between Revolutionary Guard speedboats and three good-sized American ships. Our vice admiral over there, Cosgrip, was saying that this reminded him of the October 2000 terrorist attack on the Kohl in Yemen, in the Aden Harbor. Except the thing is that was consummated. It was a small group of people who came up on a sedentary, immobile ship and blew it up. These are three moving ships. I got to tell you something, my friend. Let us assume that the Ingram, which is the frigate, was actually hit by this, or the Port Royal, which is a cruiser. There was a destroyer called the Hopper. If they had, say, hit and crippled, wouldn't be the word, sank any of these three ships in the Straits of Hormuz, the oil markets, which are already going nuts as is. I leave L.A. for 4 days. I come back. I see the price of gas is up 14 cents. The oil markets are going nuts. One nutty trader in New York decided to place a $100 a barrel of futures speculation, drove the market nuts last week. Well, I got to tell you something. If those ships had actually been hit, oil would be at $110 a barrel by the end of trading day today. You'd be looking at $200 a barrel a month from now. You'd be looking at $6 a gallon gas. No. The Iranians don't want that any more than we do. Because if they close the Persian Gulf, guess what? Their exports that go south through that passageway, they don't go anywhere either. No, I think that this was a typical incident, the likes of which happen on the high and low seas all the time, and was broadcast loudly by the SMSM, the sucky mainstream media, because they wanted to piggyback that story onto the story of Bush being in Israel talking about the fate of Iran at the hands of Israel and the United States. I think this is this gives good cover for him to come out and say, see, I told you, dangerous world. And then bomb the hell out of those poor people. It was nothing being made into something. Or perhaps it was something being provoked into an international incident that maybe the Iranian Revolutionary Guard naval crew realized, we don't want to get sucked into this thing. We're being lured. Because they wouldn't win. Once again, who benefits the most from this thing? You got Bush, who is jonesing for an attack on Iran. So I have a legacy as a successful war president. Okay? You got Ahmadinejad, who is terrified about being thrown out of power. You know he's not going to provoke the United States into an actual attack on him. These orders did not come from Tehran. If they came from anywhere, they came from Washington. Is this a phony baloney story? Is this the Gulf of Tonkin? Is this the U.S. Maine Redux? I hate to believe, it's just so depressing, that my country, the one I live in, the one I pay taxes in, the one I raise my children in, can't be believed at all. And that I am more likely to believe people I have very little in common with culturally, because in fact, all they want is not to be blown up. We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Sherwin.
Yes, hi, Johnny. I was in the Navy back in 1969 and 70.
Back when the Pueblo incident happened?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was a medic. I was stationed at Oak Knoll Naval Hospital.
Where is that located?
That's located there in Hayward, just outside Oakland in the Bay Area.
That's in the East Bay, right.
Yeah.
Next to Fremont. Yeah, okay.
Right. Anyway, Commander Lloyd Pooker was one of my patients.
Really?
Yeah. I took care of him. He had some kidney damage from being beaten across the back with bamboo rods, you know.
By the North Koreans when he was in custody. He was in custody for about 6 months with them, right?
Right, yeah. They tortured the men.
Right.
Anyway, excuse me.
Yes.
The Pueblo incident was, sort of swept under the rug at that time because they were so preoccupied with what was going on in Vietnam, yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
And
let me ask you something. Did Bucher ever say, they maneuvered me way too close to the shore. I didn't even know why we were out of international waters. That's why they snatched me. Why did they leave me in custody for 6 months? Because you've got to figure, Sherwin, that the South Korean army and the American military must have held some North Korean POWs that they could have made a quick exchange. You know, I think that they wanted to see whether or not North Korea was going to back down. I know that we threatened to escalate the war in Korea, but as you well know from being in the service at that time, we were kind of starting to fall short of warm bodies, and by 1970 they stopped the draft. The lottery took over, right? So it wasn't like Nixon had a lot of leeway to expand the war. The difference now is we have a highly technological way of doing stuff. We have cruise missiles now. We have computer guided systems. We have submarines in Boston Harbor that can hit downtown Shanghai with ICBMs, with missiles. Things have changed considerably. But all the same, that's another incident where nobody knows whether or not we are trying to goad the North Koreans into a war. Question is this: were we trying to goad Iran into attacking our Navy this morning? Wouldn't surprise me in the least if we did. That's so sad. Doesn't that sadden you in a way? You can't trust the American government at all. I mean, theoretically, they're servants of the people. We live in a democracy. We vote them in. We vote them out. And yet, it doesn't seem to matter if it's a Democrat or Republican running the government. All of these guys seem to be beholden to the worst interests in the world. You got the Likudniks in Israel. You got the Saudi royal family, who supposedly are at each other's throat. But in fact, that fascinates me, that everything the Saudi royal family want and the Likudniks want Israel, they seem to be just about the same thing. Have you noticed that? And wouldn't it be something if Iran's ruling elite was destroyed, or chaos ensued in Iran, a Shia country so close to a Sunni one, in Saudi Arabia, so close to the Jewish state of Israel? Isn't that odd? Saudi Arabia, friend of the Bushes. I seen him making out with Prince Bandar. Thought I was watching gay porn. And Bush's relationship with the Israelis, awfully tight, don't you think? What do you think? You think we provoked him? 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Jeremy in Miami, you're on with Johnny.
Yeah, I just heard you make a point before, and you said Bush's ally, Israel. And I just wanted to point out, I'm more liberal and progressive than anybody can be. And they're our ally, actually.
Israel is our ally. Here's a question.
Israel is our ally. It's always been the Democrats that have been friends with Israel because they don't have any oil there. And the Republicans' friends are Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, but isn't it true, Jeremy, listen to me, though.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting how Saudi Arabia's interests and Israel's interests seem to be the same?
I don't think that's true. I think it's absolutely true.
Look,
let me answer.
I'll let you answer in a minute. But Jeremy, I mean, everything that the Saudi Arabians seem to want, the Israelis want. What do they want? They want chaos in the Middle East, so nobody questions the Saudi royal family. You got 2,000 people running the affairs of millions of people. You got 35% unemployment among Saudi Arabian youth. You got to come up with a common enemy that they can be pissed off at. In Israel, same thing. You got half of the country are peaceniks in Israel. They hate the idea that the government won't negotiate with the Palestinians, and they get antsy, so the idea is they keep them at gunpoint constantly so that they don't listen to the peaceniks. So the Likudniks say, see, you don't understand what kind of a threat Hezbollah and Hamas and all this stuff is. You know? And it's funny, both sides, the Saudis, Jeremy, and the Israelis, what they want is chaos because that way they stay in power. Do we agree on that?
No, I disagree.
You don't?
I think it's ridiculous to say that the Israelis want chaos. The Israelis want to be able to survive. And a lot of people benefit from what happens over there. And of course, sometimes people have things that interest them.
Funny you should say that. It's not Israel, per se, that wants chaos. It's the Likudniks. It's Benjamin Netanyahu. It is the far right. It is the settlers who want to drive Israel deeper into Jordan over the West Bank, who want to hold on to Gaza, although they've relinquished it pretty much. It was the Likudniks who decided that they should go into southern Lebanon and shag down Hezbollah. They were driven out in 4 weeks. And why? Because half of Israel looked at that imbecile new prime minister they had, and they said, look, we occupied this land for 15 years. We had the crap kicked out of us. These people will fight us for 500 years. Get out. But the Likudniks don't see things that way. Their attitude is no. We got to have perpetual conflagration. The Saudis got to have perpetual conflagration. By the way, Jeremy, what is good for perpetual conflagration is quite good for high oil prices because it justifies them, doesn't it? Yeah, we've been caught stealing. When we come back, let's talk about this. Did the U.S. Navy provoke Iran? Did Iran try to provoke the U.S. Navy? Iman and Najad wants to stay in power, scare his people a little, raise the boogeyman of the U.S.? What a tangled web we're weaving here in the Middle East with George Bush there right now, machinating away. What do you think? We're at 800-989-1480. I'm at TBCWRA. My name is Wendell. I'm in for Mike Malloy. Mike will be in tomorrow. Don't go anywhere. Johnny Wendell in. Oh, yeah. We have been talking about this incident in the Straits of Hormuz. Iran and the United States faced off in the Straits today. Apparently, the Iranians backed off and their speedboats went back to Iran. And our ships successfully negotiated that narrow 6-mile passage of seaway. You think this is a big deal? You think we provoked them, hoping to drag them into a war on behalf of Mr. Bush's interests, Mr. Cheney's interests, and those of the State of Israel? Bush is in Israel now. Apparently, their defense minister, Bush surrounded by like 10,000 Israeli cops. Unbelievable. And apparently, the Israeli defense minister is briefing Bush on Israel's stance on Iran's nuclear program, which our own national intelligence estimate has said will not or has not yielded any nuclear weapons. What do you think is going on here? We're at 800-989-1480. New Jersey, Weed Man, good name. You're on with Johnny.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good, Weed Man. What do you think?
Hey, I was watching. I'm a truck driver. I'm in Texas. I was around a bunch of goobers today. I was watching TV in the truck stop on CNN, and I see the story come up.
Right.
I instantly thought, that's bull. That's crap. Come on. You know, and I was watching. People gathered in front of the TV to watch this.
Well, because they thought it was like Pearl Harbor Redux. Like, oh, my God, we've been attacked. Yeah.
Yes, they wanted to see what was going on, and then I started hearing all the comments about we should have blasted them out of water. You know, this, and I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. First of all, you know, and
most importantly, Weedman, you're a truck driver. We blasted them out of the water. A month from now, you'd be out of work. I mean, you're gonna afford $5.56-$7 a gallon of gas to truck stuff around? A head of lettuce is going to be worth more than my head. Well, it already is, but anyway, you know. Know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I know. I'm struggling now. I'm an owner operator. Under my own authority, everything. So everything's on me. But you
must be thrilled with the Mexican truckers that Bush is allowing over the border too, right?
Well, I had my problems with that issue, but yeah. I kind of think it's been exaggerated a little bit, but I really didn't want to get into that.
Okay, but anyway, so you saw at a truck stop in Texas that people were going jingo crazy here.
Right, and I just couldn't believe it. I was like, wait, first of all, every day our military encounters their military. Our military encounters dozens of military.
Of course. They go back and forth. I mean, remember, like, the East Germans and the West Germans, Checkpoint Charlie, that they were the arch enemies from what, 1945 until 1990? They exchanged cigarettes and stories. They're all related to each other. Bread and circuses, baby. Alex on Sirius in Chicago, Illinois. You're on with Johnny.
Yes, hi.
Hey, Alex.
I served in the Navy myself like 10 years ago.
Okay.
And incidents like that, they're happening basically almost every day. It happened to me a couple times in the Baltic Sea.
Yeah.
When Swedish firefighters attacked our boat. They didn't attack, but it looked like that they were about to attack.
So why would the Swedish attack anybody? They're neutral.
No, I mean, it looked like it.
Oh, it looked like it, but it never happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
They simply were testing us.
Right.
Testing our capability.
Right.
How we would respond.
You think Iran was just assessing our capabilities, or we were assessing theirs?
I think so. And what also surprised me is Swedish, right now, they have a very strong navy.
Yes, they do. They always have.
Big army.
Well, what's interesting, Alex, is one of the reasons supposedly that Hitler never wanted to attack Sweden is not just because they declared neutrality and also because they claimed some weird Aryan racial bond, but the Swedish navy has always been brutal. And the terrain, inaccessible. A lot of Sweden could not be conquered. Wasn't like Norway, which has a gigantic coast along the Atlantic Ocean. Sweden is abutted on its east and west by Finland and Norway. That it would have been very difficult to hold. The Russians and the Germans had to divide Finland, more or less, in World War II. But, yeah, now it happens all the time, I thought. Tom in Philadelphia, you're on with Johnny.
Yeah. Hey, Johnny, how's it going?
What do you think, Tom?
I think the left-wing spin machine's trying to make a mountain out of a molehill, you know. I think they're just trying to keep Iran the boogeyman, and, you know, they lost their chance to make war with them when that NIE got forced out in the open.
Yep.
I think we should be looking at what happened with Bhutto in Pakistan. I think that's their chance to make another war over there to drive up the price of the oil for the Saudis and screw us off.
I don't know. I mean, at this point, you got to wonder about oil prices and stuff like that. Bush is on his way out of power. If the price of oil goes that much higher, it'll become impossible to elect a Republican, which is why I don't understand what he's thinking. I mean, the price of gas, whether or not people say so in polls, you drive by a gas station every day, you fill up every other day or whatever, it's not going to make you happy to see it go from 3 to 320 to 4 to 5. Unfreaking believable. Lawrence in Oklahoma, you're on with Johnny.
Hey, John, I just found I was in the Navy back in 96 when I was over there. They had an incident where the USS Gettysburg collided with one of the Iranian warships.
Right.
And, you know, ever since then, the Navy said never let that happen again. So.
I got a question for you, Lawrence. You ever heard of the USS Liberty? Ever heard of the Liberty? Liberty was bombed by the Israeli Air Force. They killed U.S. naval personnel. They bombed the thing. Israel did, in the Mediterranean. Did we declare war on Israel? Never even came close. But because this is Iran, who has oil that we covet, different story. I got to tell you something. I had a really, really good time the last 4 days. Shout out to Billy and Ian, my crew. John Manzo, the boss over at Nova M, a righteous dude. Welcome back Mike Malloy as he mans the mic tomorrow evening. The New Hampshire primaries are on us. We will have new leadership in the new year. I hope. You never can be too sure. Goes to show you never can tell, as Chuck Berry would say. I will see you soon. You can always email me at tbcwra, tbcwra@aol.com. Bookmark it. We will continue to talk, you and me. My name is Wendell. This is the Mike Malloy Show. It's been a pleasure. And by the way, you can move on if you feel like it. Peace.
There is no us and them, if not now.